Hello, this is Candace Burke, host of Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Silver City, New Mexico, Kuru 89.1 FM, and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our featured nonprofit or advocacy organization in Boone County and surrounding area. Today's guests are Dr. Barbara Mora, Christina Wolfred, and we also have Jana Porthill from SPIN, or Supporting People in Need. Barbara is SPIN's secretary on the board of directors, Christina is the director, and Jana is a peer support specialist. Welcome to Community Spotlight, Barbara, Christina, and Jana.
Thank you for having us.
Now, what can you tell us about SPIN, starting with its history or mission? Who would like to begin?
I can take that question.
Okay, Christina.
SPIN started in February of 2017 with the idea of creating permanent supportive housing to house people who are very difficult to house in other situations. People with behaviors and habits and illnesses that are difficult to for landlords to deal with, landlords without specialized training. So that's a really big concept, permanent supportive housing, that entails an entire group and team of people from our local governments to developers and the HUD office and the Coalition to End Homelessness in Santa Fe, an entire team of people working together to put together a special project. And we've been working on it for about 5 years now. Once we realized that it was going to be such a big effort, we decided to do the small things that we could do, and we opened our first transitional house in 2018 for men. We started with men.
And that's in Silver City, here in Silver, right?
It is here in Silver City. It's moved once or twice since we opened, but we have a beautiful location on Swan Street now that houses 10 men. And we work with local people, mostly local people, who are coming out of the Grant County Detention Center or out of the prison system, even the federal prison system. And we also like to save a special spot for people just coming off the streets. A lot of times we identify people out of the shelter that are really trying to do something different, and we'll grab them up and transition them to the transitional house so they can find some stability and grow some roots and move on to be productive members of our community.
So I want to hear more about the transitional homes, because as my understanding, there's one for men, which was started with 2018, and now for women here in Silver. And also there's a men's home in Deming, right? From my understanding.
That's correct. So we started with the one in Silver City. We have 10 beds there. And then we opened one in Deming. We have 8 beds in that one. And we most recently opened one for women, and we have 5 beds in there now with the capacity to hold 7. And we're really excited about that, because we've seen lives change from people that have used us in a proper way to get to that next stage in life.
What are some ways you have really seen the progress in your clients? I mean, what comes up? What story comes up as you think about it?
I would say this is Barbara, is that we see these men and now women working together, and they're so grateful to have this opportunity. They are sober living environments. They are supervised, and the culture that develops is amazing. Christy spoke recently about, especially the Deming men's shelter, is just the way they support each other. There has been a lot of success. We have at least a 50% success rate for men so far. It's been much newer with the women, but transitioning out to independent living. It's a long process to describe, but the social employment that's now become part of. So getting them into those programs, trauma and recovery, some others, finding them employment, and our social employment program gives them a true path out with dignity and autonomy. And you say, wow, 50%, isn't that kind of low? No, it's huge.
That's huge.
For people coming out of the prison system, And so this is truly what I call restorative justice, which our prison systems really don't do. I wish they did, but somehow they don't. But anyone coming out of prison who finds themselves on the street has a very low chance of, you know, not going back to prison.
And I can't even tell you the number of times that I've heard from people, this is the first time I've ever held a job. This is, we took all the houses camping last weekend, and many of them, it was the first time ever they had been camping ever. You know, seeing the tall pines for the first time and just being in nature. And we had a really wonderful forest ranger that camped with us, and he took them and showed them the pueblos and the burial grounds and the wells, and explained to them about the CCC and how it used to be a CCC camp, and really just the history and the culture. And so many have never experienced that.
You heard wolves that night.
Oh, you heard wolves.
And coyotes, and they were distinctly different.
Oh, well, I would imagine. And, you know, it's so good that you're addressing all this, too, because, you know, there's been such a huge stigma attached to homelessness, chronic homelessness, especially with co-occurring disorders. When you have someone who has a long history of mental illness combined with a substance use disorder, what are some obstacles and challenges you face and spend your clients face dealing with these stigmas?
Well, it's much harder for them to go out and find employment. And a lot of times that in itself just depletes their confidence. So building them back up in that manner is really crucial initially when they move into the house, and really creating a safe environment for them to know that they can do that again, and that learning to love themselves is a really big, like, that's really huge in the process of regaining a way back into society in itself.
And we hear a lot, even from some of our elected officials, that that they're helping these people is just not something, you know, they do it to themselves. That there's a huge stigma around mental illness, that's for sure. And not everyone who's homeless is on drugs. And not everyone who has mental illness is on drugs, but they do often go hand in hand. And that those behaviors and that, and it's a cultural attitude that they come to believe. And so in our transitional houses, we work really hard to address those critical thinking errors and change people from the inside out, not just not doing drugs, but really changing the way we think about life and the way we think about other people and the way we think and feel about ourselves.
Another obstacle that we've had from the beginning is what's called NIMBY, not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And that's been, you know, over and over. And people, well-meaning people, have said, oh, it's so good what you're doing, but you can't do it here because this is my neighborhood. And even though we've found what seemed to us great locations for providing the services we do, I think it's fear. I think that these are not hateful people, but there's a fear, and maybe it comes from their own experience of being broken into or feeling violated. The homeless especially tend to get blamed for a lot of crime, but a recent study by our police department found that when our main offices and shelter moved to that area, there was no increase in crime. And so, but people's perceptions, you know, misinformation.
Yeah, misconceptions.
So, but that tends to wane over time. And so in the locations of our transition homes, you know, that NIMBY was, you know, it rears its head each time. And then we have found that in our process, we just try to be really kind to our neighbors. And we let them know, we're your neighbors now. We want to be good neighbors. And we don't want to be afraid of you or your boss. And it does come around. Right now, we've got a great relationship with our men's transition home in its neighborhood, where these relationships with the neighbors have just sprung up. And it's great. But it took a little time.
Yes, of course. What would be like a typical day in the life of a client you're providing services for, especially like in the transitional homes? What is that like in terms of the support?
Well, they start off in the morning, about 8:30 in the morning, with their beds made and with a group gathering and just some encouragement for the day. Some of the people go to employment after that, and some of them go to therapeutic services. On Fridays, we have a psychotherapy group for them. Each individual develops their own plan, but it always involves some phases. The first phase being an adjustment period, programming.
Programming.
What we're doing here. But it always involves some programming, and then we work into the employment phase and into the transitioning phase. Sometimes we see that take about 6 months. Sometimes it's taken a year. Sometimes it's taken longer. But as long as people are working towards their goals and we're seeing growth and progress and there's obstacles in there, of course, too. But as long as we're seeing that growth and progress, we don't push them to go and do something they're not ready for.
And what can you tell us about permanent housing? What are some of your projects along those lines?
Right now, Hidalgo County, amazingly, is the first place they've invited us to, one, come down and provide the daily services, because Spin provides weekday services to all the people in need in this community, which are coming out of poverty, but some of them are just elderly or widowed or maybe starting to have some cognitive impairment, having difficulty getting the resources they're eligible for. Lawrenceburg somehow got wind of what we're doing and invited and to come down there providing free office space and now a site for permanent supportive housing. So we are in partnership with Blue Line, a development company who's done this permanent supportive housing in different places in the country. And again, this has been going on since early 2017, and we're getting very close. We're not quite shovel ready, but we're close. We still have some governmental
application ready.
Yeah, we're application ready. So that first place, I think, is going to be about a 16 unit.
30. So it'll be a 30 unit
housing, separate apartments, some common spaces, on site supportive care 24/7. It's different than other, say, low income housing units. This is specifically for the population that would not be able to live independently on their own.
That is so cool to hear.
Yeah. And it is happening in other places. We didn't think this stuff, but we connected. We as in Christy.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to, after we get our first one under our belt, to having one in Grant County and one in Luna County also.
We definitely approached them for some time, especially in Grant County. And Grant County is just not quite ready because we need strong support of the community. But I we're getting there, and I think especially with Hidalgo County being so close, when people can see, oh, this is what it is. Yeah, maybe we should do that. We're hoping.
That would be, absolutely awesome. As a social worker, one thing that comes to mind, what inspires you, what continues to inspire you about doing this work? Because I know on one hand it's enormously rewarding, but also you have to protect yourself from burnout and, with compassion fatigue, as we call it in social work language. So what keeps you going with this? Jana, you're a peer support specialist, so what comes to mind?
For me, as a peer, I come from my share lived experience. So I feel like I know what it's like to be in a pit, and I know what it's like to be in flames. And I've come out of that, and I feel like I can help carry water to that and try to help, put somebody else's flames out. And that really encourages me in seeing people changing their lives, and there's so much that's been that you can visually see that happening and people regaining that confidence and growing. And it's just so refreshing to actually see that, because there is that stigma and you can't escape that. But it's nice if you actually take a breather and go check it out and see that.
And it's not everyone who's successful, but the ones that are make it worth it regardless.
Mm-hmm. See, for myself, I don't know, I consider compassion a gift from God. And so I accept it. And I don't know why I have feelings when I see someone on the street that I want to know who that person is. I want to know what's their story. But my own personal experience is family members. An older brother with severe chronic mental illness who died some years ago in a mental hospital, which we didn't really have that much of anymore. So he was well cared for when he needed it. And I lost a son to his addiction. And so, you know, when I see people on the street, I see my brother. I see my son. And yeah. And so I'm never going to just blame them for the distress in their lives. I want to find out, is there some way that, you know, we can be useful to them? And, you know, often the most useful thing is initially when you see someone on the street, just approach them, look at them, and say, hi, you know, my name is Barbara. What's your name? How are you doing today? And people light up.
I really agree with that. It's a human being we're looking at who's struggling and suffering. What about for you, Chrissy?
I've been homeless. I was homeless on the streets of Phoenix trying to get through the trade school that I had started, and I wasn't on drugs, and I didn't have severe mental illness, and I was still homeless. And when I did my first internship at the Gospel Mission, I realized there was some people who might never be able to be housed on their own. And that's really where the permanent supportive housing love came from, is that we wanted to help people who could not help themselves. And, you know, when we give a boost to the least of us, it raises the quality of life for every one of us.
Really glad you're all sharing this, because so many families like you, Barbara, have been affected, you know, on this level. We have family members also who've had these struggles. And I you know, it would be hard-pressed to find any family now who has not personally experienced someone they love suffering, struggling with this. So I'm really glad you're bringing attention to this. Because,
you know, we have one of the highest incarceration rates of any country in the entire world.
Yes.
And so you can't even find a family who hasn't been touched by incarceration.
Absolutely.
Separating families and taking families apart in that manner. It's not without repercussion.
No. And Barbara, like you said, there really is a justice issue, a social justice issue. There are too many people in jails and prison that do not belong there. They need a program like SPIN to support them through their struggles.
And when they do get out, if they do, they're wounded.
Yes.
These are deeply wounded people. Yeah.
And institutions.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right, Janet. And what else comes to mind as you see SPIN and what you envision for it? What are some other projects you have in place or they're already in process right now?
You know, I didn't envision half of what we have going on. I just thought if I could take 10 men and help them think about things differently, I'd be doing great. Then we had all these wonderful community members, Dr. Torta Sparks, stand up and say, hey, I want to help with this. And there's been enough of that support that it's developed into what it is, and it will go where it's going because of that community support. And, you know, we talked about some of the barriers being people, but we have the number of supporters, amazing, amazing community support we have, far outnumbers the number of naysayers that we encounter. And I envision us having permanent supportive housing complex in every county in this little corner of New Mexico. And I envision us doing it a little bit differently maybe than other people do it. And I hear quite often from the guys who are coming out of prison that they've been in other halfway houses and none of them operate the way we do. And I just take it as a compliment and
surely is.
And know that our success rates are good.
I would also say so many relationships that have been developed with us in this community. Hugely important. Law enforcement. I mean, we interface with law enforcement a lot.
Frank Gomez has been amazingly supportive.
Amazing. Yes. And open-minded. And the Silver City Police Department is now, I believe, going to be doing some training, recognizing that training law enforcement is in what social workers know, and that we, you know, we can borrow from each other, and because we're all serving the same people in a little bit different ways.
Well, that answers a question I had about training social workers as first responders.
Yes, and they're doing that in Albuquerque.
They're doing it in Doñana County, too. It is happening.
Yes.
And I know we are on the verge of having a mobile crisis unit here in Grant County also, so I'll be excited to see how that develops.
I'm really psyched about that.
Yes.
Now, our listeners, of course, will want to know how they can make contact with you, either as volunteers or to support you. How can they do that?
They can stop by and talk to someone. I'm in the shelter office two or three days a week, and I'm in the other counties the other days of the week. But there's always someone they can speak to. They can call us. They can even call my cell phone, 575-494-1128. We're on the shelter at 575-956-6131. They can contact us by email, spinhousingnm@gmail.com, or our website, spinhousingnm.org. Usually just hanging out and seeing what area you'd like to fit into, you know, and everybody has their own unique set of talents and purpose. And we help in so many capacities that we can usually find a place for just about anyone.
There's room for everyone.
And if someone had little time, they could always throw money at us. So
that wouldn't hurt.
Stand open arms.
that would mean a lot. I mean, look at some organizations. They have their little bells over the holidays. You know,
we definitely ring the bells for the Salvation Army.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if it's just an idea of brewing. Maybe we ought to set up one day a month where we bring people on tours. Because sometimes
that is a great idea.
Sometimes people are afraid to come to a homeless shelter. And, you know, they just don't have the experience of being with people quite a few have some mental illness, and they feel afraid. But if we did a guided tour, it'd have to be on a day where we'll talk about this more. But isn't that it? I think it's an excellent idea.
And which is why I hope that every 6 months I can have you back on to provide needed updates.
Yes, we are growing. Yeah. Again, like Christy said, we're blossoming in ways like we didn't even see this coming, like Lordsburg inviting us.
We have come to a place in our career, I guess, where we're actually taking people that we've worked with for years and helping them become providers through the Certified Peer Support Program. And so it's pretty amazing to watch. We have several employees that have been clients, and we work hard to keep them supported in the supported employment, not only at the shelter, but through RAMP, which is Routine Assisted Maintenance Program. We take people and they do yard work and just small maintenance things for people in their homes.
Supervised, directed. So they learn some skills,
excellent,
and they start to develop a resume. And this is like an entry level getting back into employment and some dignity. It's like, wow, we just built something for somebody. I did, you know.
Well, there certainly is such a huge need for peer support specialists. I mean, who better understands someone's narrative than someone who's been through those same experiences, like you were sharing, Jana. So is there anything else you can share with our listeners briefly before we wrap up today's show?
I just really want to thank everybody for their continued support and their interest in helping with people who are suffering from mental illness. We really appreciate the way that the culture and the stigma around mental illness is changing with the law enforcement officers, with even just with people, business owners. You know, there's the culture of the entire world, even in the probation offices. Our probation office is wonderful about how can we help, you know, not not just how can we throw you in jail, it's how can we help. And so that, just knowing that our country is changing that culture is, has been amazing.
Awesome. Barbara, you were going to add something.
I was saying the one program we didn't talk about, which has been important, is that the Grant County Detention Center invited SPIN to do the after-hours transport. Sometimes someone might be picked up, nonviolent crimes, are taken to the detention center, booked, and then released in the middle of the night, no transportation. So they set that up with us and said, hey, could you guys do this? And sure enough, so the workers, the, you know, staff, paid staff, that's been the ones who volunteer for it, get up in the middle of the night and give somebody a ride to where they want to go. If they have nowhere to go, they go to the shelter.
That's fantastic.
And it's an opportunity to find out what's going on in this person's life. How else can they?
Well, I am just really grateful that things are really working out with SPIN, because there is such a need for what you're doing, and really grateful to have you on today. Thank you so much, Christy, Barbara, and Jana, for being here today.
Thank you.
Community Spotlight airs every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. You are listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Silver City, New Mexico, Kuru 89.1 FM, and online at gmcr.org. I'm Candace Burke. May you be well and happy.